Last Sunday, I wrote this verse, Romans 3:21, in Ethiopic on the board, and I'm so frustrated because I never even got to deal with it except to briefly reference it. But before I dive into it, because I'm going to get to it today, and the Syriac, and I have on the board the Greek of the same verse, Nuni de Koris Nomu Dikaiosuni Theo Pephanerotai. Pephanerotai. Got the Arabic, Falana, Barir, Sharia, God, and on through all the others saying the same thing, the Hebrew, and scribbled over so bad I couldn't really focus on it, the Ethiopic. Now, why am I spending so much time on this to give us an understanding before we move on of Paul's use of the word law? Divided the church since the war between James and Paul. If you don't get this straightened out, somebody's going to keep trying to confuse you the minute you get outside the doors of this church. Oh, we're saved by faith. That all evangelicals agree. But that's why I want these signs up here towering over the city again. Jesus saves with no but attached. You don't understand the significance. All churches in the evangelical frame are saying, you're saved by faith. But, and if they don't judge you because of judge not that you be not judged, they become fruit inspectors, as I said here one day. They find the verse by their fruit you shall know them. So we have fruit inspectors examining your behavior. It is axiomatic that Paul is saying, and the New Testament proclaims, and God's intentions are going to aim to that result. That's what the whole doctrine of sanctification is about, but we haven't gotten to that yet. By your fruit you'll know them. Grace is not turned loose on someone, and we are to live the rest of our Christian days being taken as though we are not, and never becoming what we ought to be. But the English language is not designed to communicate a paradox. I've said this before. When I was teaching philosophy in college, if I could get the students to even begin to intuitively feel the meaning of a paradox in 6 months, I was a success. We, by nature and by our language, Aristotelian in logic, must warp the meaning of a paradox into an if this, then that. No, a paradox is logically contradictory, mutually exclusive, concomitant opposites, yet true in one. Huh? All right. All the church councils in the early days were fighting over this very inability to understand an Aristotelian logic and the Grecian mindset and their language based as ours is on that pattern of thinking. They can't think in existential opposites. Therefore, how much of Jesus was divine and how much was human? And when was he divine and when was he human? And when did he cease to be human and become divine? And when did he cease to be divine and become human? Ryan Lieber said it better than anybody. He was a living existential paradox. He was God and man, human and divine, supernatural and natural, in every part of his being, in every act that he performed, in every, I'll use the word again, existential moment of his lifetime. There was no way you can separate and say, this, which camera am I on? This one? No. Just hold your hand up, camera person. Which camera am I on right now? As long as you come back. She has to do everything. You know, God must really want this message, and the devil must really not want it. We can't comprehend this with our brain. He was a living paradox. And all the deep truths that he taught are paradoxical. You live by dying. Oh, well, that's translated into Aristotelian logic. If I die a little, I'll live. You get by giving. Aha, then I'll give to get. No. God has promised no man hath forsaken, but here as well as over there, rewards come. That's why I can't preach the paradoxes, because it makes people give to God for wrong reasons, the prosperity doctrine. And they don't camp out long enough on the word that's the prelude. Forsaking self means forsaking the expectancy to get. And yet, paradoxically, when you cross that line, then the getting occurs. You become first by being last. You go up by going down. No, that doesn't mean you go down and then the escalator will take you up. It means concomitant existential happening as you go down. Somehow or other, you're upping. It is a concomitant... Oh, I haven't got 6 months with you. The point is that this has been exploited into adding law. This is what James wanted to do. Christ is the Messiah. You still got to keep the law. And what's worse, nobody knows what's meant by the word law. That's what's worse. That's why I'm camping out on it. I'm going to read a couple of things to you. You'll understand what I'm digging to. Let's take this one. You want to stay with me while I do this? Paul uses... Let me drop a statistic on you. The word nomos that's being translated law throughout these various passages, the word nomos, noonie, day, but... Now, Kodesh, chasm is what we get from that, a vast gulf away from nomu, law, a righteousness, dikaiosune, of God, has been uncovered and is being manifested and shining out as light. Nomos, the word that he's using, law, everybody thinks they know what it means. So let me dig a little. Here is a book by... Well, let's get this other one first. This is a book by the Finnish Exegetical Society. Now, exegesis is to lead from behind a curtain and put on display. So this Finnish Exegetical Society seeks to unfold God's word as unseeking. This is exegesis that I'm doing. Now let's read what these... And they're famous scholars. And this is a marvelous product. But they're quoting Overbeck here, and they say, Paul had only one student who understood him, Marcion. And this student misunderstood him. It's a good way to start. Scholars widely agree, they say, that Paul criticized the law. But there is no consensus concerning the reason Paul criticized the law as he did. It has been asked whether the apostle found something wrong with the law itself, or with the interpretations given to the law by those who lived in the sphere of the law, whether Jews or Gentiles. On the Finnish Exegetical Society needs to hire some proofreaders, because what they said was Jews of Gentiles. F in place of the or, but I can figure that out. The context pretty clear. That's a typo. But, you know, they're above menial task. You know why I pay attention to things like that? You know the story.
Yes, sir.
My professor at Stanford made me retype my dissertation, 400 and some pages, in a day when you didn't have computers. And I asked, why can't I just retype the page that had one typo or grammatical error on it? He says, because you're going to learn from this the rest of your life. Do it right. I'm not your proofreader. I had to retype the whole thing. Just, you know, pecking, huh? Camera. I mean, I could type, but it was the pecking kind, not the modern fancy stuff that lines things up for you. They need a proofreader. But I just did their job for them. If they're listening. Whether Jews of Gentiles. I wonder if that's subjective or objective genitive. Or did he simply infer, just because it's in print, folks, doesn't make it right. Or did he simply infer that since God saves only through Christ, the law has no place in God's salvific plan anymore? According to some scholars, the aim of Paul's critique of the law was to defend the Gentiles' equal opportunity to be saved by faith. Others think that Paul was of the opinion that the way of the law and the covenant was canceled because of a shift in redemption history. And you think I'm hard to listen to. You got to concentrate, but I think I say things. I'm not sure that anything's been said here. But, well, here, and then some scholars have seen Paul's theology of the law as being more or less inconsistent. But others defend the traditional picture of Paul as a coherent thinker in the area of the law as well as elsewhere. Paul has been seen as inconsistent in the use of the term law in the question of the origin and validity of the law, in giving reasons for the abrogation of the law, and explaining the functions of the law. And I didn't know it had any. In describing the relationship between God's purpose and the law, and in the treatment of Israel. Whew. Wow. You learn anything from that? Well, you should have learned. There's a lot of argument about Paul's use of the word law. That's the point. Because people want to argue because they don't want to agree with him. Let's take this one. Same thing. Publication of the Finnish Exegetical Society, number 45. Okay? The Torah and Christ. All right. What do they say? Am I boring you? In this paper, I wish to argue that Paul's thought is the real problem.
Oh,
I'm not even going to read the rest of it. As he goes on to try to point out the inconsistencies in Paul's use of the word law. I really despise mechanical-brained, egomaniac extensions of children's building houses of block by block who can't understand the brilliance of Paul, which is why God chose him. He doesn't choose a lunatic to expound his answer to man's problems. Paul was versatile, and Paul knew what these people are not willing to accept, that the word nomos, as I traced it in history last Sunday, was a word with varied utilization down through the history of Greek culture. But it began, I will read the preliminary root meaning again as I build on this today. It began with this definition. Nomos, the word that I'm concentrating on as I went back to the 21st verse from the 23rd. I'll come back to the 23rd, where the same kind of debate fills all the journals and the translations are corrupted by it as you turn from the King James to other translations. And I do not worship as a bibliolater of the King James. This just happens to be a place in the 23rd verse where the King James is right. Whether or not the beginning of our salvation is seated in the faith of Jesus, the Christ. And from faith to faith, we become recipients as we follow in our pattern of trusting Him as He set the pattern in His trust of His Father. Or whether the Christian experience begins initiative here with my or your belief in Jesus. I'll come back to that. But I went back because it dawned on me 191 times, back to the statistics, 191 times, nomos, or its derivatives, in this case, nomu, is used in the New Testament, 191 times it's used. 91 times it's used by Paul. Or 119 times, correction. 119 times it's used by Paul. 72 times it's used in Romans. And he will use it in many different ways. Not because he's confused, like these people are saying, but because he is so well versed in the languages of the Old Testament and so well versed in the knowledge of the Greek heritage and use of the word. Where's my wife? I want her back in here. How'd you get in without me seeing you? That's the first time. That's once. Okay, I can get on with it now. She's here. She's my helpmate. This word nomos in the Greek world belongs to the etymology of namo, which is to allot. I read that to you last Sunday. Thus has the sense of what is proper or what is assigned to someone. And as I said last Sunday, being trained to do this philosophically, that very definition presumes an allotter, an assigner, a determiner of propriety. That's why the word begins in Greek culture with a divine source of nomos. Wasn't until many centuries that nomoi, written laws, came down. But as the Greek world developed, nomos represented unwritten decrees by the god Zeus. Boy, things are going on here today. What do? Run into the blackboard? Or something fall on the floor? I've kept my calm so far. But I'm telling all of you, figure out we're under attack today by the forces of evil and wake up and pay attention to what you're doing. I'm not going to keep myself cool much longer with these interruptions with my message. You're here to do a job and do it right.
Yes, sir.
Is that the normal girl on that camera?
No, sir.
Where is the normal girl? Is it Jerry Heller's daughter that normally did that camera? Where is she?
On the bus with the children.
I know you're trying, but she can't seem to hold me in the picture. Huh?
I have trouble doing that too.
She has trouble doing that too. One of the many reasons I married her. Well, you're trying hard, and I know that. But the director needs to wake up to the fact that when she loses me off of the screen, how many other cameras are tuned on to me? You all are trained. You're all live all the time. The director ought to be able to just punch a button the minute he sees one of the cameras is not in the right place. You're all live. There is no point. We don't have these kinds of directors that say, camera three, I'm coming to you in 2 minutes. Now, camera three, it's 1 minute. Camera three, are you in position? Now, get ready, camera three. 10, 9. I killed that when I came here. You are all live all the time. Act like it. You don't have one moment to relax. If I can do this, you can do that. So wake up out there, whoever's directing, and when she loses me, because that's not her regular post, I don't mind dealing with the trainees. That's how we're going to get a new staff. But the director is supposed to have a brain, and he's already trained. Who needs you standing back there, John? Get out there and yell at the director so he has somebody telling him to stay awake.
Yes, sir.
I like him. Just for no other reason for that. I told my wife, when you're interviewing them and they talk like, don't even give them a second interview. I can't stand mealy-mouthed substitutes of man or woman. Can't stand it. My God, in the bedroom, their husband, they say, I could, but I won't. Nomos began with a divine utterance. It passed to a divine principle. so credited because of the need to have a source of authority, a divine principle that really made man the source because his reason agreed with this principle as that which was allotted, proper, or laid down. It took on personal form. It became a goddess at various times, just like Dike enforced Dikaiosunu was a person. Paul knew that. He could not use the word nomos without knowing that it had taken on a whole variety of meanings. Words have multitudinous meanings. The Greek is more precise than most languages, but he exploits the various meanings of nomos. And you have to determine when he uses the word, he knows what he's doing. By context, you must redefine the word all 72 times that he uses it in the book of Romans. Now, I don't intend to take us through the meaning of nomos as we've done with the background of this verse. I will then draw upon what I've done with you, that there is no one single meaning for the word nomos. And if you've got a pet theory of what nomos means, and you bring that pet theory into the verse when Paul uses it, you're going to make the statements these people make. Paul is contradictory and doesn't know what he's doing. Language is the business of a philosopher. That's the first thing I had to learn. Words have etymological meanings. The root meaning, as it came into the language in the first place, has reported meanings, what people think, the majority of them, if you were to use it, have come to agree, is the meaning of the word. And most of those who are voting don't know any other meaning. Stipulated meanings. And I've used the illustration many times. I call this, for example, a blackboard. And there's nothing black on it except when I occasionally pick up the black writer. That's not a blackboard. But I call it that because it has this generic sort of meaning as something you write on in the days before they invented these more fancy tools of public writing boards. We grew up in schools where there's a blackboard up there, and a teacher writes on it. Nomos, you have to understand, cannot be given a single meaning. Neither can Torah. The Samaritans view the Torah as limited. And by the Samaritans, I mean those that Jesus talked about, where the Jews in Jesus' day hated them. They limit the Torah to the first five books. The Ohrit, as I pointed out last Sunday, in the Ethiopic church is limited strictly to the Octatuk, the first five books plus three, Joshua, Judges, and Ruth. Paul uses the Torah concerning one verse. Uses the Torah in context, the books of Moses, which modern scholars now debate whether he wrote them or not. But the orthodoxy of Jewry calls it the Sinaitic covenant given to Moses. Paul also refers to the law because he comes out of the Pharisee rabbi situation where they embraced the writings, the prophets, the whole law. So he can quote as he did in this chapter I'm in right now, the third chapter of Romans earlier. He drew from the Psalms, he drew from various parts of the law, the Torah, well beyond the first five books. You have to, with that long speech, you have to define the specific meaning of the word Torah or the word nomos by the context in which he's using it. Let me show you one thing. Coming out of Paul's use of nomos or Torah, Paul's use of the Torah has in referring to the law sometimes as though it were personal. Romans 3:19, which we just are two verses away from, he says the law speaks when we come to the fourth chapter. It works when we come to the seventh chapter. It rules, if I went to 1 Corinthians 9, it says, one after another, we find him using the law, in a sense, of personalizing it. The only point I'm making, which anybody can understand, the law, nomos, we've got to define it by context. At this point, I'm concerned to prove the context of this statement, but now, the righteousness, that's the King James, there is no definite article, so you got to take it out, but now, a righteousness of God, the only justification for it is the genitive that's there, but God's not limited to just one expression of righteousness. His righteousness was in the law, no question. But now, another kind of righteousness, without the law, is manifested. Without doesn't quite say it in the English. As we've gone into these other languages, this dot here, you could put this letter with a dot under it, a dot above it. This is the dots above it, fa, falana. It's a conjunction in the Arabic, but it means by total contrast. Having said in the previous verse that there is none that can be justified or made righteous by the law. And it leaves by that 20th verse of the third chapter, since the 18th verse of the first chapter, mankind is in ruins. That's the way James Boyce, the Presbyterian preacher from Philadelphia, characterized it in his verse-by-verse study. Mankind in ruins. And ending without hope, the Arabic makes a better transition. It focuses in on now, by contrast, a complete, it's a preface to a statement that's going to be opposite to what's just been described. Now, but now, this is the but, which is a complete opposite. Now, Berea, Sharia. This is the word Sharia. Sharia is familiar now in the Arab world. It is that meaning of law, which is a divine, inspired, to those who believe it, writing down of deeds to be done and deeds not to be done. It is a divinely sanctioned set of rules to live by. And righteousness, under the meaning of Sharia, of course, monopolized in the present world by the Muslim faith, claiming God spoke these rules, these life-ordering regulations to his last and most important prophet, putting Jesus in second place as a prophet but not equal to Muhammad. These written rules in the Quran become the basis for life, for righteousness, for entrance into heaven. It is law. There are other words in the Arabic for law. They kunna. Now this is a verbal particle that addresses the perfect, which means that this word was manifested, is in the past perfect, it's been done, it's finished. So now, by contrast, with no connection, Berea, this is a very firm word, without any connection to Sharia, written regulations of living, works made concrete in a list of do's and don'ts until you and others can measure your performance by doing these things and not doing these other things. And the measure of success as you enter and under the Muslim faith, which is why it is such an attraction to those that are totally immersed in it, to martyrdom, is they give no assurance of salvation. You can't know until you die. And if you die a martyr, that's the only one you got advance notice of your entrance into heaven. But every other living Muslim has to keep the Sharia, knowing it can't be kept perfectly all the time, perpetually and personally. So as ancient as the old Babylonian myth, you enter heaven hoping that you've kept it more than you violated it. And it is going to be a judgment based upon not perfection, but doing more of that which was demanded, not less. And you work to increase the conformity to the rules. To translate Paul's use of law, nomos in the Greek, nomu is the exact derivative form. To translate, the Arab scholars early on, and we're going to the most ancient texts, at a time when they had manuscripts we don't have, and as I read a few days ago or a few weeks ago, most people read in Acts and don't pay any attention that in that 3.5 years after Paul's Damascus Road experience, he spent first in Arabia and then in Damascus. You don't know Paul at all if you think he spent time in Arabia and didn't proclaim the gospel. And no one can really tell when the gospel first reached into Arabia. But those early scholars recognized in the day before Sharia had been taken over and monopolized by the Muslims. Sharia, divinely decreed list of works to perform and deeds to avoid. Work, ethic, law. Do this, don't do that. Now you want to tell me that a Baptist Sharia doesn't exist? You want to tell me a Assembly of God Sharia doesn't exist? You want to tell me that most of the churches you go across this land and most of the messages being preached today are saying you save the faith? But here's our Sharia. You got to do these things to be worthy. You got to walk worthy of your calling. And they always reduce it down to their list. I know what I grew up in. It's interesting how the lists have changed. I mean, you know, there was a day women couldn't wear makeup. I mean, remember that Sharia? You may remember that, or are you too modern and heathen? I mean, you know, after, seems like a half a century, of television evangelists' wives. They even wear crying makeup. You know, I think you, if this is the example of how to be in heaven, I think you could make a fortune in heaven with a franchise on stick-on tears. It's like the C&I dog franchise. I want that too. Because people think you can only talk to God with your eyes closed. But when you get up there where they're, you know, going to be talking to him all day, I want the C&I dog franchise. Come on, get on the page with me. We've had a pretty hard time getting this service going. Sharia is a list of do's and don'ts. Those early Arab scholars understood from the context, as you will see as we move on, that that was the particular, not the exclusive, but the particular meaning of the law in the context where he's using it. Text out of context is error. He's just talked about do do this and don't do that. Talk to the Jews about their exclusive covenantal nomism, as it's called, that if you perform, this proves you're a member of the camp. External testimonials, I've conformed. And thus, my conformity to these rules gets me in. And you always reduce the rules down to your own performance. And he's ended up saying there are Gentiles who don't know the law that perform it from something in their conscience. The do this and don't do that doesn't change both the Gentile and the Jew. Fall short in 9 passages, and then he ends up, there's no righteousing by works of the law. That's the context. They pull the word Sharia, which carries the plus attached to it. There are various kinds of laws, ethical laws, rules of behavior, NBA rules of behavior, union rules, industry rules, all kinds of codes of behavior. Only when you attach to your particular set of rules that added dimension, this is God's set of rules. And doing these gets you righteous. Does it qualify with the meaning of law and nomu as used in this context? And the Arabs picked up on that. Likewise, early on the Jews. Paul was converting Pharisees early on, always going to the synagogue. Many of those had to have what Paul said to the Romans in later days translated into the Hebrew, and when they did it, Wa'at, or Wa'ata. And now, Negalata, there is uncovered Nifl. The N puts it in the Nifl. Nifl, passive. It's uncovered. Nothing with our doing being involved. Now there is uncovered Sedeka. The righteousness that we've spent so much time talking about, and if you're taking notes, you've got to write it down. The righteousness that grows out of the use of DK to translate Sedek in the Old Testament has no meaning apart from covenant. It has to be a covenant between persons. That's why the law, the nomu, has to have the halo put on it, which is why the Arabs pick Sharia, because this must be a covenant between the people who let the government go is the law of the Constitution, the law of the land. And all other laws must bow to that. It's supreme authority, a contract between the people and the government, social contract. But there's no impetus and no power of motive to conform to a law like when you claim God said it. God's given this law. And God will again give the rewards if you keep it. Tzedek, the Old Testament word, is a word rooted in contract, requiring as a condition to the proper understanding or use of the word, persons are involved. And God, the ultimate person, gave the Torah. And all that goes from his giving it to Moses on Sinai, the rest of the Torah, even into the Talmuds, can only be justified as derived from and related to, and thus the fruit of God's giving of the orders. And the Torah has the halo on it. This is not just an ordering of behavior. This is not just an ordinary set of rules. God gave these rules. And God said, here in Sister Sal's church, thou shalt not. And usually the nots outnumber the do's. Likewise to Sharia, when they translate back into the Hebrew, they pick the Old Testament word tzedek. And now, there has been uncovered a righteousness Elohim of God, Bibili, which means what you bring into a situation and put in the negative, bringing nothing of Torah. And like Sharia, holy law, of behavior, do this and don't do that, law that must be conformed to by works, Torah. These early scholars understood we're talking about a holy declaration of behavioral works to do and not to do, which having done, gets you into heaven. Sharia accepts the fact you don't have to do it all. So you'll approach the gate with the great, like a sayer that weighs gold and metal. Do your good works outweigh your bad ones? And if so, you squeak in. The Torah in the later days, which was the lament of the prophets, they constantly sought to diminish the performance requirement and move more and more down the trail of partial, and what's worse, reduction of the law to their partial performance, which isn't new. Baptists do that. Servants of God do that. Catholics do that. They find a way to get around the failure and the confession and the indulgences. Methodists do that. Mormons do that. Once the curse of the measuring rod of performance begins to beat on you as the necessary concomitant to Christian living and getting to heaven, that pressure is there and it inevitably crowds out faith. Holy law works. Understand that. Works. Holy law of works. Now, there is no language in the world that's precise. I used to say that about the Greek. I now add and go beyond with Ethiopic. There are 210 letters in our alphabet. Again, you can read right by it, as I've said now the fourth time. And the servant of the queen of Ethiopia, converted by Philip, but before he meets Philip, reading from the book of Isaiah, because of the roots in Ethiopia that go clear back, all the way back, to the Queen of Sheba and Solomon. So they had Torahs. He's reading from the scroll of Isaiah. Philip converts him, baptizes him, and then, like Star Trek, Philip disappears right in front of his eyes. And that instant, Philip's in Jerusalem. I think a preacher who puts the exclamation mark on his sermon after he baptizes me of that kind of miraculous disappearance, even if I don't know where he went. Where, this is like Enoch. He was not, for God took him. Where, we don't know. No way this man would not go back with the testimony of the gospel. Nobody knows where this language really came from. It's attempts to take it back to a common source of the Arabic, and they go various directions. I'll pick just one thing. They don't have tenses as we have them, or conjugations as we have them in the Hebrew, for example. They have what's called stems. And you have a root verb of three letters, and then the common use is simple active. And then you have the passive, which has the niphil that puts the in front of it. And then you have the intensive active and the intensive passive, and you form the words differently. And then you have the causative active and the causative passive. And then you have the reflexive, which we don't have much of in English. The Latin language people here know about the reflexive. And you wrestle in Hebrew with seven ordinary stems. They have others, but ordinary use, about seven stems. Ethiopic has 15. To get all these different inflections. The vowels, every letter is written seven different ways. You would never recognize this word, this letter here, is the same letter as this letter. You can read right by and miss the short leg on the right of this, which is really the aleph, the sound where you got to have a vowel before you speak. That makes it an O. This little squiggly, where am I? Right here. This little squiggly on the bottom of it, here's got a short leg. There's got a squiggly. That makes it E. This makes it O. And here, you got a short leg on the left. And here, instead of three little ziggies, instead of two little ziggies, you got three. Which, in every case, precisely defines the negative is done like the Greek. In the Greek, you have pistis. You put an A in front of it. You put an A in front of nomos, you're going to have non-law. It reverses the negative. Same in the Arabic. The Ethiopic. This little squiggly here puts this in the negative. But the precision of this language, which goes back into remote history, all I know is the greatest scholar, Dillman, I agree with him, says, a superior intellect, a people of superior knowledge, conceived this language. I read to you from those polyglots we have in both the Syriac and the Room of the Book. I read to you the comments of Brian. I'm going to block on his name. I'm on a first name basis with him. I've lived with him so long, and his polyglot, the London polyglot downstairs. He reads and quotes. What? Yeah. What'd you say? Brian Walton? I got a total mental block on his name today. But in any event, it's the London polyglot, and I quoted from him Walton, I'll take my wife's word for it. She's usually right, particularly if it involves language. He says, to quote the Latin without reading it, it is from ancient Greek examples, most like apostolic times, which is why he included the Ethiopic in the Brian Walton London Polyglot. And it's come back, it is Brian Walton. Now, with that kind of credential, I decided I got to dig into this. So this verse translated into Ethiopic, watch the Ethiopic peel meaning out that's not there and not even in the Greek. And we are at one of the most ancient translations of Paul's writings. Ya'azi Saka, or Saki. This is that Ya'azi Saki. But as you break it apart, these two letters mean at present or presently, to show you how they weave it before I get to other words. This word has a long history in the Ethiopic language of being just a one-letter word, Z, which means originally time, a specific time, or a specific place was its original meaning. And then it grew into being used synonymously, time or place. So what is being said here is that the present time, Sa, by contrast, same as the Arabic Fa over there, a contrast is going to be declared. And as I trace through the heart of this little letter T, which is also another use of a word for now, sometimes indeed or therefore, I'd put wowee, because that's the meaning that goes with it. What they're introducing this phrase with imminent detail, is at the present time, by contrast, hallelujah, indeed, therefore, wowee. I wish I could get you excited about it. The next word, astriat. The root of this word is to see, ria. So we have at the root to see. As. Let you know that it's causative. My sense of humor takes me through a lot of scholarship. Ass means it's causative. That's going to be used by defense attorneys for years to come. They're going to say, Your Honor, speaking Ethiopic, ass is causative. You don't have any sense of humor today. Why are you doing in here? Why don't I just let you leave and I'll finish this message? This puts it in the reflexive. Or rather, puts it in the reflexive. We have cause to see, but we have causing itself to see. And you then have another letter added, it's feminine, And with the full mix of the words added, we now come to a intensely passive in the resulting consequences, causative, and a reflexive tone on it that is being caused, and that which is the causer is doing it himself. And that which is the causer, Tzedekah. Again, the letters, this is formed differently if it didn't have a vowel A after it. And with a vowel A after it, that's your clue that this is genitive. So we have the righteousness of Exi-Abker, which is their word for God, which is literally two words, the Lord or Master of the land. The Lord or Master of the land. Now what is being said? If I can put it now, as you who've looked at Greek interlinearies, they have to rearrange the order of the words. At present, by contrast, to those that try to get through with works of the law, at present, by contrast, wowie, indeed, therefore, a, or the righteousness, and again, there's no definite article, so a righteousness of God, causative and reflexive to be seen, a righteousness of God has been, or there was manifested by himself, of himself, a righteousness of God was caused to manifest itself. I want you to get this because there's nothing on our side. It's passive. We're not the causer. But rather a righteousness of God out from him there was caused to be seen or manifested a righteousness from God, which is totally his causing, totally himself doing it, totally beyond just seeing because it's intensive. You can have, in these stems, they have, let's say, simple active would be, he was killed. Well, past tense, perfect, he was killed. If you add the intensive stem, he was murdered. The simple active, he broke the plate. The intensive active, he shattered the plate. That's what we're having said here in the Ethiopic. A righteousness, but at the present time, by contrast, wow, a righteousness of God has been manifested, broken through, to be seen by himself, showing forth himself. While, a connector, while not the negative prefix to Gabra, not enslaving oneself, Gabra, G, V in the form here, Gabra, is the word for slave. It's the verb to work, to do as a slave, to perform under compulsion, have to do. Now, what is being said at present, by contrast, wow, a righteousness of God has been brought forth of himself to be seen, while not enslaving to mandates of Orit, This is GA here, which puts the genitive again, mandates of Orit. And Orit is that theological law, that law that lays down the law, you must do this and not do that to get to heaven. I'm beating this to death because wherever you turn in Christianity, they're still going to say, I heard him, but you got to do this. No, you don't. Do it all you want, but it won't take you to heaven. And this is the stunner. Not doing it won't take you to hell. Until this congregation with me, I can lead them to where it's not opinion and you can see it. Not, while not enslaving, what is seen is a manifestation of the righteousness of God Himself. And again, it's Tzedek. A covenant relationship is going to be manifested, which is from God, while not enslaving to Orit. Well, how is, where do you go from that? That manifestation, which is God's own nature, causing itself to be displayed, is going to be the faith of Jesus. We're going to encounter His living faith relationship to a covenant made in the councils of heaven. That if He would do, not the works, He had to do those. And had He done them, there would be nobody saved. He could have gone back as the perfect servant. He was to set a pattern of a new covenant, which is a manifestation of God's own nature in His Son in that mystery of the Trinity, doing a new kind of righteousness, faithing, a new kind of tzedek, the tzedek of faith, the sharia of faith, the sharia of nomu, the sharia of law, not of works, lest any man should boast, but rather a receiving of the Spirit through hearing of faith. Every one of these languages confirm what is not in the equation of the new covenant is divinely ordered performance, do-dos and don't-dos, which elevates the choice of the word to Sharia, not Kuna, to the Ethiopic, not enslaved to Orit, the Octatuk, in the Hebrew translation, bringing no part of Torah. And the Syriac, which again I wrote and we'll have to get to next time. Now, Hasa, Din, and this is when attached to law, which is no or not, with no, without. And look at their choice of word here. They don't help us that much because they borrow from the Greek. Nomusa. A righteousness. Tanuta. I want to come back to that. Tanuta. A righteousness of Allah God has been, and here we have the verb, or rather the noun and the verb I, noun, and to see is the root of this, at Gilead. The word GL roots in I or C. So as the word for the manifestation in the Ethiopic is built from the verb to see, in the Syriac, it's built from words for I and to see. Now, but now, apart from, without, not, with not any part of, nomusa, Same word, nomos. A righteousness, kanuta, of or from God has been lifted and made to see. And again, you have passive, causative, and I don't normally put the little vowel signs up here, but these three little squigglies put it in intensive, causative, passive. That God intensely causes to be seen a righteousness which is without nomos. You know where we get the word canon? Canon law? You familiar with that? The Bible's the canon? Now, just as in nomos, nomos was a child of Zeus, and Dike enforced the will of Zeus, and nomos expressed it. And then nomos became identified with accepted, what's allotted, and what is proper, which presumes a source for that. And the most powerful source is when it can be agreed, God has said it. Likewise, this word for righteousness, kanuta in the Syriac, goes all the way back to the divine rule of kings that's called the Khan, like the Aga Khan in the roots of these Middle Eastern languages. But its real meaning has to do with canon. And that is also a word in the Greek language that was used throughout their history for, and ultimately finds its fruit in the divine principles of Plato, to where it's the divine perfection that is to be the standard by which everything else is measured. As Sedeq involves a contract with authority, kanuta, I'm a little disappointed in the Syriac here because they have a word for Sedeq, but they chose to translate kanuta, which is the model, that which must be striven toward. And the new model that is to be striven toward, as the Syriac translates it, just like the Ethiopic, just like the Arabic, just like the Hebrew translation back, now, but transitioning from the previous verse where there's no hope, but now, with no nomos, nomusa, a righteousness, a standard to be striven for, of God, has been made visible to be seen. And the next verse, the Syriac will concur, sets that new vision, which is why Paul can call it a Sharia of faith, a Torah of faith. He can call it a kanuto of faith. He can call it a law of faith, because God exhibits, causes himself to come forth in this new pattern without nomu, a righteousness intensely made visible to the eye from God, which leads us into that next verse, past all of sin and come short, to the 23rd verse, a new law. A new law that calls not for a checklist of do this and don't do that and march into heaven looking and making sure that I'm a little better than my neighbor, but that which started sin in the first place. You don't measure love. You don't measure trust. You either have it and hang your life on it, or you don't. 1,000 times I've probably asked the question, what do you want from your loved ones? Perfection or trust? God's been seeking that since he created Adam and Eve. And that which is a condition preceding to trust or love. Freedom. You can't coerce love. You can't force trust. Trust, you don't measure. You're not 10% trusting, 90% trusting. You trust or you don't. You love or you don't. God has established a new law of faith, an example, His own righteousness, the covenant between He and His Son, God's fail-safe plan, burst forth to be seen on the stage of history. Without Sharia, do this. Without Torah, do this. Each of those uses of the word are without the kind of law or contract that preceded, which was based upon do this, which could be forced. You can enforce the Sharia. You can enforce the Torah. You can fake the Sharia. You can fake the Torah if by that we mean what he means in this abandonment of it, a list of do's and a list of don'ts and a prideful sense of accomplishment if you do it, and a terrible sense of failure and hell staring you in the face if you don't. He set us free from that. That's not the law anymore. There's still a law, but it's not that law. The new law is faith. Inspired by example of the bursting forth of this new kind of righteousness, which is God's own nature in a trusting relationship incarnate with His Father. And the author and finisher of faith sets a new pattern, which is not a checklist, and it's a pattern that goes from faith to faith. And I will be talking about that law as we move into the next verses, and that's my message today. Offering time. This has been a long one, folks, but it's a subject that will set you free as we dig and unfold Paul's multiple use of this word nomos. I hope it helped you. Take my words, voices of faith. That's an act of faith. That's where you show you're living by the new law. That isn't some regulation that's put upon you. It's the trusting relationship of helping the Father and the Lord of our life in getting out the word to those that have not been as well taught as you in the faithful clinging to the promise that I may be speaking and Paul may have laid the foundation. But we will trust the Father to keep His promise that we'll stand right alongside Paul and Luke to share in the rewards of this freedom-engendering message that the church down through the centuries tries to cloud up and enslave with some new orit. Be faithful. That's the word. Be faithful to your covenant commitments of trust. God trusts you. You sure can trust Him. Reciprocate as His Son did in the pattern that was set. I think I want the song again, Amazing Grace, to close the service.